Hi, this is Manton Reese.
And I'm Daniel Jalkut.
And this is Core Intuition. It's been a year. This episode is sponsored by PDF Pen and Linode.
Well, Manton, you know, I talked a few weeks ago about the kind of fear you have when you're releasing an update, a major update, and you're hoping you don't have a big bug in it. You're hoping that you don't ship Mars Edit 4.0 and then discover that, you can't publish to any WordPress sites on it or something. But my concerns about shipping bugs pale in comparison to the concerns at Intel, I think, today, as news is coming out about this. I don't really understand it too well, but the way it's being described makes it sound pretty serious. There's a security bug in Intel x86 64 chips, which, for those who don't know, probably everyone listening to this program knows that that is indeed the chip architecture that Macs are based on, as well as most Windows machines, Linux machines, etc. So there's apparently a really bad Intel security bug, and it can't really be fixed except, this is where I don't know all the details. I'm reading a Register and The Verge have a couple articles we'll link to. It doesn't get much worse than this, I think. If you ship something in hardware and then the way they're describing it, the workarounds for the bug address the security problem, but come with according to the Register, I think they say a 5-30% slowdown.
That's a big range. Is 5%? Yeah, you may not notice that. But 35%, no. That's pretty significant.
Well, this is kind of funny, too, coming on the heels of all this kerfuffle about Apple's security, or not Apple's performance degradation. Yeah, they did this thing. They reduced the peak performance to avoid shutdowns and stuff. And, some people were pretty angry about that. That's only on an iPhone that has an old battery, and you can fix it by replacing the battery. Now, Apple's made that more affordable to do by, offering a $29 battery replacement. I don't think there's going to be any $29 Intel x86 64 replacement.
Mm-mm. Nope.
I will be kind of annoyed and frustrated if my fancy MacBook Pro has to get 5% slower just to address this security issue. And everybody will be furious if any of these computers have to be 30% slower.
Yeah, so I'm not worried about this personally, because I feel like, remember, even going back further than the battery issue, there was the issue with the blank root password, and there was a lot of people upset about that, and I said I wasn't really that worried. A lot of people called me on it and said this is actually super serious, worst security problem in modern history.
Yeah,
we're all fine. Everything's okay. And I feel like with this it's not as easily patched, but I would have to download an app to my computer that would try to exploit this problem. And downloaded apps to my computer can already cause significant damage. So I'm not panicked yet. It is a bad problem, though.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is, we rely upon this sort of safety net of the baseline security measures put into place on a computer. So, yes, you do have to download or have installed without your, it doesn't necessarily have to be an app you download. It could be nefarious code in some Apple software that, bad person has gotten a job at Apple and sneak some code into
there. Yeah, but I mean, that's a problem yesterday, last week. I mean, that could be a problem at any point in time, regardless of this bug.
Right. That's what I mean when I say that it's the baseline protections that's why the baseline protections are so important, I think, is you expect the sort of scale of damage that specific pieces of software can do to be limited by these baseline protections of the computer, of the architecture of the system. Mm-hmm. And I guess, I just want to counter I think you're right. And the gist of what you're saying is right, is that it's kind of let's say there's a security problem on my refrigerator. well, you know, somebody could do something to my refrigerator that would make, well, let's just say make all the food spoil. But heck, even if it was like make it blow up, I would still feel pretty safe because there aren't that many people who have unfettered access to my refrigerator.
Right.
And that's because I have these other security measures in place, like, you know, locks on my doors and stuff like that. I think that it's also just worth, I think you're right that we can like appreciate that it's not a serious risk that most people are suddenly exposed to, just like with this refrigerator metaphor. All the same, if somebody said, hey, if you push this sequence of buttons on this particular brand of refrigerator, it blows up. Regardless of how likely that was to cause you harm or, you know, compromise your refrigerator, you would still be sort of like agog at it. Mm-hmm. You'd just be like, what? Seriously?
Yeah, that sounds like a recall issue waiting to happen. And of course, many refrigerators now are not just completely isolated and someone would need to break into your house. They are on the internet.
That's right.
And it's like this is kind of a new trend where all our devices are connected. And, you know, I think if companies rush too quickly sometimes and don't think through the repercussions, you know, these kind of security exploits could have even bigger problems. We actually got, over the holidays, we got the Amazon Echo Show. You know, we've been huge fans of the Echo for a long time. We've debated this on the show, you and I. And the show is the one with the screen, which I was super doubtful, skeptical, seems stupid. Turns out, pretty cool, pretty useful. But it has this feature where you can enable people to just drop in and look at your camera, like just connect without without approving. And so like that's concerning. Like I think most people would keep that disabled because like what if there's an issue and like someone can just like look at your kitchen, which yeah, it's not super harmless, but that's a major privacy invasion.
Right.
We should think through this stuff, and I hope that these bigger companies are thinking through this stuff. So when there are security issues that you know, people can't just randomly look in everyone's kitchen or blow up their refrigerator.
Well, it's like that root bug you mentioned. And at the time, I think we were like, oh, yeah, well, you know, someone's got to be on your computer. I have to have access to your computer. How likely is that? Da, 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 da. And then we start thinking it through and we think, well, actually, that's pretty likely if you work in a workplace where people can just cruise by while you're out at lunch, do something to your computer. And then we just think about it. We think about it some more and we think, oh, remember I was like, oh, well, geez, if you can do this through remote login, well, how many people have back to my Mac enabled? And it's one of these things where the luxury of having the baseline security in place is you don't have to think through some of the weird edge cases. And we just don't know. We don't know yet what the edge cases are here. We don't know how many people. We know that somebody knew about this bug for the last 2 months or whatever, that they've been, I guess, working on fixes for it. We don't know how many people. We don't know if it's only good guys or bad guys. And kind of similar to, I like our contrast here because I think you're totally right to say don't panic. And I think I'm totally right to say panic, like prematurely. You said, well, we're fine with the whole root thing. My take is we don't know if we're fine. We don't know if there's like a looming, mm-hmm. I mean, but I don't know. I should give credit to maybe security researchers. Maybe they know more.
Right.
But we don't know. We often don't know when there is some kind of security lapse. We don't know whether we have been compromised and the damage is still forthcoming.
Right.
It's like when, you know, this massive Social Security number leak.
Oh, geez.
That
I worry
right.
about.
Well, right. But that's an example where it's like, hey, you know what? I could say I'm fine because nothing's happened yet, but that doesn't mean I'm fine. You know, like most bad guys aren't in a rush to take advantage of everything on day one, I think. I think they have a lot of people who take advantage of privacy invasions have a longer game in mind. And, you know, this is, I know we don't live in a perfectly secure world, but this feels like, boy, Intel is so big, and there's so many processors that this affects.
Yeah.
So I guess I'll just be curious to see how it plays out. Hopefully, whatever workarounds Apple has don't impact us too badly on the Mac.
So, and I was looking at, you know, you said we're not security researchers. Of course, a lot of people are going to be weighing in that are. And one person posted to their Tumblr blog. This is a link from The Verge, I think, and they talk about, a lot of these headlines talk about Linux. And of course, we don't run Linux mostly on our Macs. this person said, a little digging through the FreeBSD source, it seems that so far, you know, BSD doesn't implement this page table splitting, this issue that is causing a problem with this potential exploit. So who knows? Maybe Max won't be affected. But of course, it's super early, and they said it's definitely not just Linux. NT kernels also are affected. So I mean, it could be Max, it could be not be. We don't know. It's super early, and even more important to me, or more concerning, or things that I might focus on is servers, because servers, for the most part, are Linux. And how are the different, you know, cloud providers going to react to this, and is it going to affect their infrastructure or not? I know Linode's actually sponsored the show. Don't want to jump ahead to that, but they did say on their Twitter thing, we're looking into this, but we don't know yet. Mm-hmm. We don't know if there's going to be a maintenance. We're going to have to, you know, update everybody's kernels or VMs or anything like that. We just don't know because it's too early.
Yeah. Well. Anyway, guess I'm just going to be grateful today that I don't work on hardware and that I didn't ship a security compromising bug to millions of computers, hundreds of millions of computers, probably.
Yeah, I'm not organized enough to work on hardware. I have to be able to fix my bugs after they get out there.
It's like the continuum: hardware, native software, web software. You know, in order of forgiving, you know, quick bug fix updates. But you know, yeah, I get stressed out enough just having an update go onto my website to be downloaded. But hardware stuff is scary.
All right, this week we are happy to have PDF Pen from Smile sponsoring the show. PDF Pen is the ultimate tool for editing PDFs and going paperless. PDF Pen is great for organizing documents in the new year. Split and combine PDF documents to send just the right things to your accountant or your lawyer. Fill in PDF forms, whether interactive or not, add page numbers, redact account numbers, perform OCR on scanned documents, find and highlight all instances of a specific term. Step up to PDF Pen Pro to create PDF portfolios, collections of multiple PDFs and related files. Great for presenting year-end documents. Learn more about PDF Pen at smilesoftware.com/podcast.
Manton, you know, every time we have PDF Pen sponsor the show, I get to talk about how useful this app is. And it's so diversely useful. It has so many features. It's one of these apps that has been worked on for years and years and years. And I usually try to just tie it up in a nutshell and say, hey, you've all run into limitations of Apple's Preview app on the Mac. And it's great that Apple includes Preview with every Mac. And as Mac users, we have a facility with PDF that a lot of people on other platforms don't have. But you run into limitations with Preview, and that is exactly where PDF Pen comes in. There's so many different varied features of PDF Pen I use all the time. I use it to OCR my scanned documents. It's really good for redacting text. You can do things like if I have something, say it's like a tax form I need to send to my accountant or something, I can go through a whole like tax return and search on my social security number and just redact it with just a search and replace. It can treat redaction like a replacement. Little things like this, there's a ton of them, and you can learn a lot more about PDF Pen as well as other Smile Software products just by going to smilesoftware.com/podcast and then browse around their site. Look at their videos. They have videos about what's new in PDF Pen version 9. They've also got a bunch of blog posts that highlight very specific things you can do with PDF Pen. Things like correcting typos in a PDF. Have you ever tried to edit a PDF and see and experienced how futile that feels? Well, PDF Pen is just the kind of powerful tool you need to be able to make things that seem impossible with PDFs seem like a piece of cake. So once again, go to smilesoftware.com/podcast to check out PDF Pen. And if you're feeling generous and you're on Twitter, give Smile Software, drop them a message and remind them that you are grateful for their sponsorship of Core Intuition. Thanks so much to Smile and PDF Pen for sponsoring the show. Speaking of software, Manton, you've actually had some progress in the last couple of weeks. We haven't spoken for a couple of weeks because we were kind of took a week off for the holidays. But in the meantime, January 2nd passed. So happy 1 year anniversary.
Thanks.
On Microblog. Yeah,
it was a good, it's good. I mean, it's been a year since I launched the Kickstarter, and I wanted to do a little more on January 2nd to kind of reflect on it. And I have some blog posts I've written and podcasts I want to do and everything, but I haven't, we're still in vacation mode. Kids are still off school. And so I haven't gotten to some of that, but I did think about when January 2nd hit, you know, how far I think we've come in the last year. And I think we've come far. Like I think that a lot has been done in 2017. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy about that. And I'm looking forward to 2018. But yeah, as we talked about, I rolled out micro.blog more to the public with the daily limit. A lot of new people joined, and more people are joining. It's actually it comes in waves, you know, like someone says, hey, check this out. And a lot of people check it out, and then interest dies down maybe for a couple of days, and someone else says, oh, you know, I'm over on micro.blog, check this out. And so that's been really fascinating. And it's similar to what you had mentioned a couple of weeks ago, like what if you have your New York Times moment where the New York Times writes about you and you only allow 100 people to join and there are thousands of people that want to join, like what do you do?
Yeah.
And that hasn't happened exactly, but there are little small versions of that have happened. And so John Gruber mentioned it when he has many followers, of course. Kevin Rose, millions of followers, also mentioned it in a reply and wanted to join. And so a couple times I quickly hit my limit. And one day in particular, it was actually a couple days before Christmas, and it was on a weekend, but there was so much activity on Twitter about it from some of these links that I bumped up the daily limit. I think I bumped it up to 500 people.
Ooh, 300, fancy.
500, something like that. And I've kept it at that, whatever that is. I think it was 500, but it might have been 300. It's kind of fascinating to watch. I think the limit is still good, but there have definitely been times where if it had been completely opened, I would have had more people join in a smaller amount of time. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think I've burned any bridges kind of by having that limit, but I have seen these kind of spikes and these kind of this potential for it to spread virally, but then it doesn't quite do mm-hmm. that. So it's been interesting.
How much do you worry, what if Walt Mossberg came by mm-hmm. that day and was like, oh well, can't get an account, so I guess I'll move on with my life. There is some risk to it. I mean, the hype and the sort of scarcity of membership limits works, I think, in most companies' favor for the masses, because it kind of gives people a sense of wanting something that they maybe can't get. Or, you know, in the case of micro.blog, to be totally fair, it's really easy to get. Just most days, you're not going to run to that limit.
Right.
But when you do have a limit of any kind, you sort of do run that risk that your dream customer, either from a PR point of view or just from a personal satisfaction point of view, could have come by that day and been turned away.
Yeah, and I don't think I worry about it, but it's an issue for sure. Like if someone wants to check it out and they can't, and they potentially could have shared the news far and wide and loved it, and then they just kind of missed out and didn't check it out again. That's unfortunate. It's a missed opportunity. Yeah, on a couple of these examples, I tried to help get people invite codes also, when the limit is reached, what happens is it says, you know, you can get an invite code from a friend and paste it in here and bypass the limit. Mm. And so I saw some of that happening, and I reached out to a couple people privately, or one person in particular I'm thinking of, you know, that I wasn't sure anyone got him an invite code. Yeah, so I've tried to kind of stay on top of it, but it's a potential issue. It's a trade-off, really. It's like, is there a risk that I'm going to miss out on someone joining, and is that worse than, you know, the service exploding and falling over, you know? And I'm not sure, to be honest, but I feel like I feel like everything's working fine. Like, it's growing. A lot of people are joining, especially after the new year. It's like lots of people leaving Twitter and saying, you know what? I need a break from this. I need to try something new. And like, here's my service. It's right here. Well, you know, I don't say, why don't you try it? But like, people are finding out about it and saying, you know, I'm going to give this a try. And I think January 1st, there was a lot of that. January 2nd, which was yesterday, there was a lot of that. We don't need to get into the politics on Twitter quite so much necessarily, but there was a lot of like, this is the last straw.
Yeah, I saw some people drop off Twitter.
And we welcome those people in. And as long as people are joining every day and the service is growing and we're improving all the areas that we need to improve, I think we're on the right track. I don't think there has been a single day where it's like, oops, that was my one chance. And
right.
I blew it.
Well, that's a good attitude. I mean, it's kind of like getting back to what we've talked about several times over the past few months about, you know, you don't have a single chance. You have all these chances. And, you know, one day, the day that John Gruber mentioned it on Twitter and folks like Kevin Rose noticed and checked it out, that's one example of a day, you know, that you had a chance to make an impression on some people. But it's going to happen again. You're going to have, you know, maybe one day it will be Walt Mossberg. Who's, I just use Walt Mossberg as the canonical example. He doesn't even have like an outlet per se anymore. You know, he's retired, but he's kind of like to a lot of us in the Mac world in particular, he's just like this emblem of notoriety. Like if you could have like 10 years ago gotten a Mac app reviewed by Walt Mossberg, you would be on cloud nine.
And it's a fascinating example because it's actually not exactly what I need right now. And coming to grips with what I need for marketing and Microdot.blog has been really slow and a challenge. And what I mean is Microdot.blog needs to break out of like people that I personally know and that like the Mac community, right? Because the real people that already get what Microdot.blog is about are the bloggers and the writers and the artists and the photographers and like other people, not just people that listen to this podcast and that listen to Walt Mossberg and even know who he is, right? And right. So that would be great, but I know there's like other people that are even easier to reach or easier to market to in a way that we haven't reached. And like there's somebody that I've never heard of that when they find Microdot.blog and post about it, that is a big impact, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's like the whole thing with Apple, you know, putting reviews into the hands of YouTube people that we've never heard of. It's like, exactly. you don't know the social reach of people. And this actually sort of reminds me of something that Will Shipley said years and years and years ago at the C4 conference. I remember he was talking about, you know, getting hype around products. And one of the things that he said that stuck with me was like how to decide whether or not somebody who asks you for like a press license is worthy of the license. And his wisdom at the time was just like, if they ask for it, then they're worth it. You know, or it was basically like, don't even think about it. Just give it to them. And the logic being kind of like what you're saying, you don't know what people's reach is. You don't know what their influence is, but also you don't know if their reach is going to increase massively in the next few weeks, months, years. You don't know if you've got like the next Daring Fireball or whatever who only happens to have 100 readers right now.
And absolutely.
So you just got to kind of be a little bit out there in the world and try to get your message out wherever you can. Try to keep that in mind a lot as I'm thinking about my own marketing.
Yeah. And of course, I'm super grateful to all the people who they're already paying attention and they're listening to this podcast. They're in the iOS community, the Mac community, and they're trying it out. And hopefully some of them are loving it. That's where it starts. I mean, that's where everything started. And the Kickstarter would not have been successful at all if it wasn't for our community.
Right.
Look, you know, because that's how something spreads. It starts kind of in one circle and then hopefully slowly spreads out. And what I'm trying to capture here in this discussion is just like at some point, a service like Microdot.blog has to spread out more and find other communities and people that are not just, you know, Mac developers or not just, you know, I was gonna about to say not just bloggers, but actually no, that's fine. There's a lot of there's a lot of bloggers in the world, and like I said, that bloggers in a way are the perfect match because I don't need to convince them
right
to write on the internet. They already get it. But it's fascinating to like, yeah, and like I totally agree with your statement that like you don't judge people. Like, are you worthy of, you know, checking this out and telling your friends? There could be someone that just tells three people and one of them signs up, and that's great. Like, this, we're not talking about like millions of users on Microtop Blog, like small increases in people who are engaged, posting every day, paying for hosting. Small increases matter a lot. So, even spread to a small number of people actually makes a huge difference. And then you have some people that have a huge reach. And like, so Kevin Rose, he has almost 2 million followers on Twitter. Like, that's a lot of people, right? And it was a reply tweet, so not everyone saw it. But like, he hasn't stayed engaged. Maybe he will check it out again and post more, but he didn't. I don't think he posted more after the first day. And it's the holidays, you know, some people kind of need a reminder to check it out again after things settle down. But it's possible that him checking it out, and maybe he's not into it. Maybe it's not a big deal. And so that almost 2 million followers doesn't translate to something big. Whereas someone else who has a small number of followers or readers or YouTube viewers is like caught on the idea and interested and engaged in it. And then that spreads even further, even though the reach technically is smaller. And this is like this is the problem with like all these numbers and why Microtop Blog does not have follower accounts, because you can get really trapped into thinking that matters more than it does.
All right, folks, we are happy to have back sponsoring the show in 2018, our friends at Linode. If you need a Linux box to host a website, a private Git repository, or maybe to serve as the back end for your iOS app, consider Linode Cloud Hosting. With Linode, you can get a server running in under a minute. They've been doing infrastructure as a service since 2003, and their plans start at the 1 gigabyte level for only $5 a month. Linode's 10 global data centers are equipped with industry-leading data center-grade SSDs, and their plans range from the low $5 a month plan up to high memory plans starting at 16 gigabytes. All of this comes with the full control you expect with a VM, supporting Docker containers, encrypted disks, VPNs, etc. And they have 24/7 friendly support even on holidays. Now, for our listeners, they also have an all-new promo code for 2018. It's CoreInt. You guessed it, CoreInt 2018. That's CoreInt 2018. That will get you a $20 credit, which is effectively equivalent to 4 free months to try out Linode at that 1 gigabyte entry level. So go to linode.com/coreint. Use that coupon code CoreInt2018 and see what Linode can do for you. Thanks to Linode for sponsoring the show.
Yeah, it's great to have Linode sponsoring the show again. Of course, I use Linode for all my Microtop Blog app servers. And we've talked about I'm getting a lot of new people joining. New year, people trying new service, maybe taking a break from Twitter. And so I've had a lot of people join just this week. And my servers are still performing great. Really happy to have Linode. They offer great support, great value. They're also hiring. They just finished renovated headquarters outside Philadelphia. They have some great benefits, nice place to work. So if you want to check that out, go to linode.com/careers. And of course, to save $20, use the promo code CoreInt2018 when you're signing up from linode.com/CoreInt. Thanks to Linode for sponsoring the podcast.
Well, Manson, another bit of news hitting the tech sphere, particularly the Apple iOS and Android developer spheres, as it happens, is Apple has acquired the Buddy Build team. And, you know, folks who listen to this show probably remember Buddy Build actually sponsored our show a while back. We talked about it a bit, you know, in a non-sponsorship sense. Just to summarize, Buddy Build is a continuous integration service and pretty popular because they make a lot of, you know, automated builds and distribution really easy. So it seems like kind of like a natural fit for Apple to acquire Buddy Build. It's kind of similar, I think, to the Test Flight acquisition from years ago. And as everyone knows, Test Flight became a sort of full-fledged feature of iTunes Connect. So anybody who uses, You know, anybody who makes iOS software and sells it through Apple can also use TestFlight. I guess there's some room for hope that, you know, everything that BuddyBuild does today, all the services they provide, will, similarly to TestFlight, one day be available through iTunes Connect. But of course, there's also cause for uncertainty on that front. You know, Apple has acquired a lot of things over the years that didn't seem to come to much in terms of future products. So we don't really know. You know, the way that this was phrased on the BuddyBuild blog was basically BuddyBuild is now part of the Xcode team, and they're gonna keep. I don't think they announced any kind of shutdown for paid customers, for their BuddyBuild paid customers, but they did announce a shutdown timeframe for free customers. You know, they had like a free tier. And I think that the fact that, is it, quote, they say, as of today, we're no longer accepting new customers. Existing free starter plans and Android app development will be discontinued on March 1st, 2018. So that's real bad news if you happen to be an Android developer who loves BuddyBuild. Let's just face it. Apple acquiring your favorite Android continuous integration service is not good news. So bye-bye, Android users.
And we saw the same thing happen with TestFlight. They get acquired. Android is almost exactly the same thing. You know, like in March, it's like we're not going to support Android anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's kind of funny because, you know, BuddyBuild obviously was targeting Android. That means there's some Android experts at BuddyBuild. Are they part of the Xcode team now too?
Poor. They might be looking for another job.
Might be a little mismatch there. But, you know, there's some room for optimism that I think it would be pretty cool if iTunes Connect had some kind of, you know, they already do a lot of this stuff. Like if you upload a build to iTunes Connect, it gets like some kind of baseline analysis done on it. And it says, you know, hey, you're using this such and such framework, you're not allowed to do that, or, you know, you forgot to include a full-size app icon. So there's sort of some, like, you know, rudimentary continuous integration stuff happening. But of course, the way it happens now is all, you know, you have to do manual, like, either use product uploader or, you know, send it directly from Xcode. And some of the cool stuff that a continuous integration service provides is, you know, really deep integration with version control. So, like, I know with BuddyBuild, you can do things like push a new update to a beta tester branch, and then that will kick off the whole chain of events that needs to happen to build and publish the app on TestFlight. It's hard to imagine that Apple just wanted to acquire the team of developers without integrating some of these niceties. Right. But it is also easy to imagine that they might be slow in doing in translating this into, you know, features for all iTunes Connect users. Or that they might just decide, you know, maybe there's only one feature that they really wanted. They don't care about the rest.
Yeah.
So we'll see. It's also really interesting news, of course, for any competing continuous integration services. Like, I wonder how, you know, it's always kind of like a funny feeling when you get the sense that you're like somebody like Circle CI. You know, you don't really want like one of your major platforms that you're targeting for your customers. You don't necessarily want that platform itself to get in the business of competing with you.
And you definitely want to, for anyone that this has happened to, you know, competitors, you definitely want to quickly embrace your tool as a cross-platform solution, because there is so many people now that use BuddyBuild, but they want this. They have cross-platform apps. They want to use the same tool on Android and iOS, and so they right away are looking for a new solution. And it's too much for, especially small companies. It's usually just too much to maintain two separate, you know, just completely different workflows. And that's why, when TestFlight got acquired by Apple, you know, a lot of people switched to using Fabric or Hockey App or something else because they wanted something that was still cross-platform, even if the iOS support maybe wasn't as integrated as a solution from Apple could be.
Yeah.
This part about the team joining the Xcode team is interesting to me because, like, you described a lot of things that are really not Xcode. They're like, they kind of are, but they're also a lot of iTunes Connect and App Store and workflow. And, like, I do kind of wonder if anything from Buddy Build will make it across to Apple or if it's really just an acqui-hire. It's impossible to say. You know, we don't have their finances and we don't know what the deal was, but that the fact that they called out the Xcode team is interesting. And the other difference in this acquisition is what you said about the free plans and the pay plans. Usually when Apple buys something, they just shut down all the paid stuff because it doesn't matter. Like, Apple has too much money. Right, they don't need, right, like, your $5 a month or whatever it is. So that was interesting. I don't know what the story is. Maybe that was just a temporary thing, like they wanted to keep the paid people happy for the next year or two, but that's another kind of interesting twist in this.
Well, to Buddy Build's credit, their business plan was there was no $5 a month option, but they did some pretty good jumps. Their pricing structure went from free, $0 a month, to $71 a month.
Wow, yeah.
Is the next cheapest one you can get.
Nice.
And then it goes up to, right. And then that's the starter plans. And then you go jump over to business plans and it goes all the way up to business plus is $1,000 a month. So, I mean, still that is not worth it to Apple. There's no way that the money that Buddy Build is making matters one iota to Apple. Right. So I think you're right that, it's sort of probably just a continuity thing. You know, don't piss off your customers.
Especially, the people paying $1,000 a month, too. You don't want to just leave them out.
Right. I mean, it's kind of a funny... this is the risk. You know, as great as Buddy Build is and as great as a lot of these hosted services are, the risk of using them is always like, well, what's going to happen to them? And for the Android folks, in this case, it's very clearly not good. But it's also a total change in the relationship. You know, you got some company out there that's paying, presumably they have some customers at this $1,000 tier, and they are going overnight from kind of like a big fancy company that can afford to pay $1,000 a month to a little startup into a little startup for whom they are like the most prized customers, right? They're like, we love this $1,000 a month customer. And they're going overnight from being like fancy pants, big time Buddy Build customer to practically could care less Apple customer, you know? It's like, it's going from being like, yeah, well, you know, if I say jump, Buddy Build says how high. I'm making this up. Yeah. I don't know. But, you know, if I ran Buddy Build and I had $1,000 a month customer,
you might listen.
Their emails might go to a slightly higher priority queue.
And that's the trap, too, with that kind of software, right? And like Joel Spolsky has written about this, calling consulting, where when you have a small number of high paying customers, it starts to be that they are your product designers and they lead your product direction. You can no longer make choices that could satisfy, you know, thousands of customers and that satisfy you. You have to satisfy those people that are writing the big checks. And I like not being in that business. I should probably charge more than $5, but like I like not being in that consultingware style business. And certainly Apple, they don't really care about that kind of enterprise-y sales stuff anymore. Like I remember when they acquired Next, you know, of course, they brought with a lot of that business. And one of the things they did, you remember this? They dropped the price of WebObjects, which is their web development framework. They dropped it from like $50,000. I couldn't remember if that was right, so I just looked it up. $50,000 to $699. And then eventually, I think it was just free. So Apple, they don't need to charge $50,000 to any one customer.
No.
That's not... It's not them.
That's another good example, though, where that $50,000 customer probably felt pretty fancy.
Yeah.
With Next and didn't feel too fancy at all.
Steve Jobs' personal number.
Yeah. All right, Manson. Well, we got Intel bugs galore and we got Android customers having to find a new continuous integration. I also want to mention on the subject of, not getting caught into this, like I said, you know, you pay these great services for a hosted continuous integration. One thing that people probably already all know about, but I think they're also kind of like you, this is infrastructure that's used by a lot of the continuous integration services, is Fastlane, because you know, Fastlane is kind of brilliant in that even though it's quote unquote owned by Google, it's completely open source. So like, that's a kind of a nice compromise where you can have like a really, you can depend on infrastructure like Fastlane. And, you know, when it got sold from, I think it went, what, it was like acquired by Twitter from the original, like they hired the original developer. Right. And then it went with Twitter's other developer tool stuff with Fabric over to Google. And I guess now it's Firebase or something they call it?
No, that's different. Something Firebase like, is a different product.
Oh, okay. Okay, I think it might be under that like umbrella somehow. But
makes sense.
Yeah, it's, anyway, the point being, if Buddy Build, for example, were based on like fully open source stack of tools, then you could say, okay, well, Apple owns it now. I'm still good though, because I'm just going to like self-host this or And Fastlane, it's something I've really been meaning to look into more, because I do like about Fastlane that I feel like I can invest in it without any risk of, you know, getting sold to, well, you know, you could imagine, it's, you know, credit to Google that they are still sponsoring this work on a product that does support both Android and iOS. And, you know, if it was Apple that got Fastlane, it wouldn't be supporting Android anymore, you know? Google sort of has an interest in being in both worlds, I think. But, you know, this is all reminding me, one, you know, for the past several months, I've been thinking, hey, I should check out one of these fancier continuous integration services. And particularly after we looked at Buddy Build, I was like kind of interested in that. And but now I'm like, you know, maybe I'm just going to go dig into Fastlane and build my, you know, I already do my own continuous integration hosting, but I think I could really up the value of it with some of the Fastlane stuff. So
yeah, the Fastlane has a lot of interesting things. That's been on my to-do list as well. And sometimes, you know, it just depends on the developer, which way you want to go. I still just kind of do everything the old fashioned way and just build my apps in Xcode. But like there's a trade-off, you know, when we talked about Buddy Build, we talked about how easy it is, and these other like centralized, you know, web-based services, how easy it is to get started. Whereas you have the open source tools and maybe it takes a little more time to get set up. And I don't know, it just depends on how much you want to invest in it. And I'm really curious now that you've kind of said it that way, if Apple will take some of this stuff from Buddy Build, and if not, open it up, like find places to plug it into the existing workflow and tools and Xcode server and, you know, all that kind of stuff where it could potentially fit.
Yeah, I mean, like I don't know. I know some people are using Xcode bots, but to me, they just seem kind of like a dud. Like,
maybe that's the thing here. When they said we're joining the Xcode team, I thought they meant Xcode.app, but maybe they met Xcode server and bots and that whole side of things.
Yeah, it was probably, you know, we know the way Apple works. Optimistically, you might be thinking, oh, well, maybe we'll learn something about this at WWDC. Probably not. Probably we'll learn about it at WWDC 2019 or 2020. unfortunately, I mean, I remember things like when Apple acquired Lala, and it was like 3 years or something, it seems like, before Apple Music. You know, they didn't even use it for Apple Music.
Right?
They used Beats for Apple Music. So you can't always get your hopes up that Apple's going to do something with the cool tech that they acquire. But hey, you know, maybe it won't work for Mac.
And the timing is similar, I think, to when they acquired Workflow last year. It was, I don't think it was quite this early in the year, but it was definitely a little bit before WWDC, and people were thinking, oh, we'll see some of the Workflow automation acquisition stuff show up in the new version of iOS. But of course, no, it takes a long time for that stuff to be integrated and the team to settle into Cupertino or whatever they're going to do. So I agree. Same thing here. It'd be surprising if we see anything from this year.
Yeah.
But who knows? I mean, they have a lot of work to do, just like winding down and responding to their old customers and dealing with the Android shakeout. And so I'd be surprised if they are going to be They said they're working from Canada, I think. So, like, they're not moving to Cupertino. But, like, I'd be surprised if they are going to fly down there and, like, immediately get started, like, working with the Xcode folks.
Right. Yeah, and the fact that they're staying in Vancouver also does suggest some kind of long, you know, that's actually good news because it means it's not like a strict acqui-hire to get folks into the existing Xcode project.
That's a good point.
You know, structure. Yeah, they're planning on this being a sort of like independent unit that does something. And hopefully that something is some of the same stuff that they were doing that made a lot of people really like the product and that we get access to it as Apple developers.
Yeah, I'm hopeful the way you say that. All right, Daniel. Well, good talking to you again this week, catching up after the holidays. I'm excited about this year. I think, you know, we were both able to like check off some big milestones in our apps.
Yep.
You got Marzetta 4 out. I was able to get micro.blog major progress. And I don't know, I'm hopeful. There's a lot to do, but I think that it's going to be a good year.
It's going to be a good year, Manton. All right, let's follow through on that and make it so. Everybody else, hope you have a great year too. Hope you're off to a great start with your year. If you are looking to change some things up in your new year, join us on the Core Intuition Slack channel if you haven't already. It's a great place to hang out, chat.coreint.org. And if you're looking to be generous with us in the new year and you really appreciate this podcast, you can become a member, support us financially, coreint.org/membership. It also gets you some cool perks, like secret extra podcast episodes, extra intuition, and access to our members only Slack channel inside the Slack. So, Manton, I'm going to catch up with you again next week. We're not taking a week off next week, and we'll see how this great 2018 is starting to shape up.
All right, see ya.